I am here today with Dr. Hugo Slim, a former aid worker and leading humanitarian academic, who published numerous articles and books on the practice, politics, and ethics of humanitarian aid and on protection of civilians. Hugo, thanks for joining us today on the Global Observatory. First, what is your take on the debate between cross-border and cross-line humanitarian assistance in Syria that creates much discussion lately within humanitarian circles? To give some background to our listeners, this debate is about how best to deliver aid to population in rebel-controlled areas. Some aid agencies recently denounced the imbalances of humanitarian assistance that would go mainly to government areas and called for stepping up humanitarian operations across borders in opposition-controlled areas despite objection from the Syrian government. Can humanitarian actors afford to disregard the requirement of state consent, which is central to the existing normative humanitarian framework?
I think they can. I don't have a problem with cross-border humanitarian action, and I don't think humanitarian agencies traditionally have a problem with cross-border humanitarian action. But you have to do it for good reason, and it has to be ethically and in a way legally legitimate. In this case, my understanding is that for several months now, years, a wide variety of humanitarian agencies have offered aid to the Syrian government, to work with the Syrian government on that side, and have been refused. At the same time, it's quite clear that the passage of humanitarian aid to all parts of Syria has been deeply problematic, as it often is in war. And therefore, there are large parts that are uncovered still and unreached on a regular basis, while the war is still very hot. So it seems ethically acceptable to me at that point if a government is not accepting all humanitarian agencies, for humanitarian agencies to go cross-border in such a situation.
You say it is ethically possible, or maybe even ethically compulsory for some of these aid agencies to go cross-border, but can they legally do that, given the existing legal framework for humanitarian action?
Well, my view is that international humanitarian law makes it clear that aid is acceptable from a humanitarian and neutral, impartial humanitarian organization. So all agencies have an obligation under law to be neutral and impartial and humanitarian. That they must do if they are working anywhere, but especially if they are working cross-border. In terms of international law, for me as well, it's also quite clear now that we live in a world of law which recognizes the rights of individuals and not just the rights of states. Therefore, these people who are not being reached by the across-the-line operations have a place in international relations. They need to be reached. The law is not just to cover states, the law is for the peoples in those states.
Promoters of cross-line humanitarian action in Syria, or humanitarian organizations that are operating from Damascus, like, say, the International Committee of the Red Cross, argue that it is very fine to go cross-line, but if it is without the consent of the Syrian government, they might just face even more obstacles to deliver aid in the country, and probably still in the majority of the country that is controlled by the Syrian government. And so they argue that they would then lose access to a substantial part of the population that is also potentially in need. What do you reply to that?
I would trust whatever the ICRC says. I think, you know, that if they say that they are effectively potentially facing limited access and compromise of some kind because of other agencies going cross-border, that must be a genuine problem. But I think a judgment has to be made. So I again think we need to trust the judgments of the agencies who are working cross-border, that they do so in such a way that it is discreet, is genuinely neutral and impartial, that it is not about building up unfair military or political advantage for one side or the other. And I think judgments have to be made.
Let's move out of Syria and maybe to a more general discussion of humanitarian aid. The humanitarian system is growing ever more ambitious, and it seems to be inclined to become some sort of global welfare system that would be, to quote an article that you wrote in 2007, as far and effective as the combined ambulance, police and fire services of a modern state. This goes toward a transformative agenda that seeks to address the root causes of crisis and firmly step in the political realm in order to make these changes possible. Is this compatible with the supposedly apolitical tenets of humanitarian action based on the principles of impartiality, neutrality, and independence?
I think one of the great things in my lifetime as a humanitarian worker and academic is that there is no doubt the reach and coverage and scale of the humanitarian agencies and the humanitarian system has grown extraordinarily, and there's now a very high chance that wherever you are in the world, there is a high chance that if you face a natural disaster or a conflict, you will come into contact in some form with humanitarian agencies. So that is great progress, although obviously it's not guaranteed, as we've been discussing in Syria. And it's not surprising that in that way that the system should begin to formalize and become built around big institutions. But I think the most important thing is that we find ways to enable local humanitarian capacity so that local agencies, local community groups, local Red Cross organizations, local churches, local Islamic networks are able to be the first responders in some way. I don't think that is a threat to the humanitarian vision or project. I don't think it's a threat when governments are meeting their obligations and organizing health and food delivery and protection. At one level, humanitarian action is very basic politics. It's about keeping people alive and keeping them alive in dignity. So I don't worry that because humanitarian action is getting bigger, that it will automatically become political, as you say. I think it needs to remain impartial, working on need alone and working very clearly around lives, dignity and protection of people.
To be more concrete on the same discussion, you mentioned the need to be impartial. Is it possible, from your point of view, to be impartial and neutral and independent that are often considered as the operational tools to make this impartial delivery of aid possible? Is it possible to be impartial in context of broader UN integrated missions that have obvious political objectives and where humanitarian actors are considered by some to be subsumed to those broader political objectives?
I think this is a real issue. I think it's always been an issue for humanitarian action when it works in armed conflict. Always the resources of aid, the legitimacy that aid brings, there is always an attempt by one or both sides in a conflict or all sides to manipulate that. I don't think it's a new problem. It's a persistent problem for humanitarian aid. What's new, particularly in recent years, is that the main donors of humanitarian aid worldwide through the UN and Red Cross and large Western NGOs are now themselves at war. So they are belligerent donors. And this does bring particular problems, and it has brought particular problems.
Humanitarian principles are claimed to be universal by their promoters. Yet, they are often perceived as an excuse for interference by affected countries. And as you mentioned it, the main donors of humanitarian aid happen to be mostly Western countries. Do you think humanitarian principles are genuinely universal, that they are shared widely across cultures, and are the values shared by most cultures?
Yes, I have no doubt in my mind that the values of compassion, the values placed on human life, the idea that every person is precious and unique in some way, I have no doubt that that is a universal idea and conviction, and actually a universal feeling that we all feel. But it's not the only thing we feel as human beings, because sometimes we absolutely hate each other. Sometimes we feel deeply frightened of one another. Sometimes we feel deeply threatened. So our humanitarian instincts and our humanitarian intuition can and often is overridden. And sometimes, very often in war, this happens. But I have no doubt that the essential feeling of the value of a human life, of the sadness at a human death, is universal. And that's why it is a global agenda.
But what about this notion of impartiality, which for a layman deserves to be a bit explained? The impartiality is the idea that humanitarian aid should be directed where the needs are and without any discrimination, considering each human life as equal, and that priority should be given only according to the needs of the population. Do you think that this principle, for instance, is truly universal? Like, I'm thinking about Islamic charities that are playing an increasing role. We can see that in Somalia, for instance, but that are also, it seems, motivated to bring help, assistance, and protection to their fellow Muslims, which as legitimate as it is. But is it compatible with this idea of impartiality, in your view?
I think being impartial in humanitarian work in war is always very difficult. I've never worked in a situation where I felt, oh great, everything is fine, we are being completely impartial. It doesn't exist, because humanitarian action is always a struggle for access, a struggle for those values in wars which are competing over other values. So you never get complete impartiality, but you have to aim at it, and you have to say it's what you want and what you think is right. In terms of religious agencies, you know, it's also a fact that I think the majority of people in serious need of humanitarian action and aid at the moment tend to be Muslim populations. I mean, I think it's perfectly legitimate for and important that Muslim aid agencies and humanitarian organizations reach out very clearly to their own constituencies. I don't know that religion is by nature partial, actually. Certainly Christian organizations have reached out widely beyond Christian communities. Jewish organizations have reached out widely beyond Jewish communities. Muslim organizations, certainly we have British organizations like Islamic Relief, work in many places. And anyway, I don't think there's anything wrong if you are meeting the needs of a community who have needs. I think it would be wrong if you were selecting people on the basis of religion, because that would be a violation of impartiality.
Last but certainly not least, the UN Secretary General announced his intent to bring together a World Humanitarian Summit that should take place, it seems, in 2015. What are, in your views, the three or four main issues that should be discussed during this World Humanitarian Summit? What are the burning issues that needs to be addressed by then?
First of all, I welcome the Humanitarian Summit. I think it's a really important idea. I think the humanitarian world, as you said at the beginning, and as you have written, Jeremy, has developed fast in the last 20 years. I think it's a good opportunity to think about where we want it to go in future. So I think the two or three important things. The first one is consensus. If we can reach, through this process, a new international consensus about what is the moral and legal goal of humanitarian action, so that it is recognized as a part of international society, international politics, that will be extremely important if we can find some new consensus. And that might come through a declaration document and through a process of discussion. I think the second thing as part of that is I do think we need to distinguish between humanitarian action in wars and humanitarian actions in natural disasters and areas of chronic need and chronic vulnerability and, like the Sahel, chronic food insecurity. We need a distinction between these two things because, frankly, the ability and the desire one might have to work with government, build up local structures around a natural disaster or chronic vulnerability is very different to the way humanitarian ideals might want to work with governments and non-state actors in a conflict. So I would like us to see some clear ethical and legal distinction between different contexts, ones of armed conflict and ones of vulnerability and disaster. The third thing that I worry about, and I think it brings great opportunity and great threat, is cyber war, if you like. There's a lot of attention on drones and robotic weapons. They are very sexy to talk about. They are being used and explored as smart weapons, and they are important. But for me, the bigger strategic threat to civilian suffering is cyber warfare and the ability of networks to be shut down, banking systems to be closed overnight. I mean, we've seen in Cyprus how near to crisis a country can be brought if its banks close, if money has to be airlifted in, and if cash points are only delivering 200 euros at a time. It becomes very fragile. Now, that kind of thing is very alarming to me. So, cyber threat as a possible area of massive civilian impact. But on the bright side, there's also huge potential for us to get much more smart and technologically savvy in the way we support people in crisis. And we've learned a lot from humanitarian aid through cash deliveries and this sort of thing. So I hope that the two-year process to the summit will also get us thinking about innovation and, you know, new ideas as well.
Hugo, thank you very much for being with us today.